Hi, everybody. It's Kai Ryssdal. Thanks again for listening to the Corner Office Podcast. Today, it's an interview I did back in May of this year, but it's a good one. It's a different one, I'll tell you that. Susan Burton is the founder and the executive director of an organization here in Los Angeles called A New Way of Life. It gives housing and other support for recently released women who've been incarcerated. When we chatted, Susan had just released a new memoir about how she came to found that company after serving 6 prison sentences in 17 years and beating a drug addiction and in and out of that prison industrial complex. The book is called Becoming Mrs. Burton. Here's the talk. Susan Burton, thanks for coming in.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
There is so much to unpack in this book, and I just want to start with the title. You haven't always been Ms. Burton, have you?
No. Life has took me on a journey, through much of that journey, you know, I didn't feel whole, connected, and grounded. So as a kid, everyone called me Sue. My daddy called me Susie Q.
Huh.
But through this journey, I've sort of risen to a place that that I get this level of respect of Miss Burton.
Earned respect based on your story. And I want to pull out two things. One is the word you just used, journey.
Yes.
Because it clearly has been for you, but also this idea now that you are raised up to this place where you have earned that respect.
Well, thank you.
Because the trip you've been on, the journey you've been on, has been long and violent and hard.
Yes.
And I won't go into it too much because I want people to read this book, but there's sexual violence, there's drug abuse, there's prison time, and there is the death of your son, KK.
Yes.
And that, I think, is the trigger factor here, right?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
So, you know, I was born into poverty. And in that poverty, there was a lot of different types of abuse. And I endured it and endured it and endured it. And the death of my son, KK, was sort of like the falling off place where I could no longer hold the disappointment and the harshness and the loss of a son. It sort of sent me tumbling into this dark place of trying to escape all that had been. At that point, I began to drink very heavily, and that drinking escalated to drug use. The drug use sent me to prison, and I was caught in this another sort of institutional abuse and criminal justice abuse of traveling in and out and in and out and in and out of prison, never, ever being offered any type of resource, any type of help with my grief from the loss of my son and the substance abuse that was a result of the grief, trying to medicate the grief.
I can't remember. You say it in the book, and I can't remember if it was 5 sentences you served in 10 years or 7 sentences.
It was 6 sentences in 15 years and a total of 20 years under the authority of the criminal justice system, either in prison or on parole.
Though you were born in poverty, there was a time in your life early when your dad had a solid factory job and things were doing all right.
Yes.
And then it all kind of fell apart as...
Yeah, I can remember, you know, as a child, the happy days of us all piling into the car and going to the drive-in. And that was a weekly routine for my father. He was a proud black man, and he had bought a new car, a 1957 Chevy. It was blue and white. And, you know, all the kids, not only his kids, but all the kids from the neighborhood would pile into the car, and some of us would lay on the floor, you know, because we only had so much money to get into the drive-in. And when we got to the drive-in, we would sit on the roof of the car. The boys would sit on the roof of the car, and that all sort of vanished as America began to export jobs. We call it the deindustrialization of America. And it wasn't talked about then, and it wasn't recognized. I think that things aren't talked about or recognized as happening until it starts to affect people other than Black people. And so this was 1957 and 58, and my father lost his job. The factory closed down. The jobs were exported. And with him losing his job, sort of went his esteem, and he began to sort of wither away. And we stopped going to the drive-in on weekends.
How old were you when your dad lost his job?
I was six.
Yeah. And then the rest of your childhood and early teen years?
You know, they were problematic. My mother ended up doing housework, and she actually applied for welfare. And my father and mother started fussing and fighting a lot. And we would hear the arguments and hear the blows and see my mother with, you know, a bruise, a black eye. And then my father would be off and gone for periods of time. And my mother applied for the county. The county didn't allow you to be on the county if there was a man in the house. And I remember a social worker coming to our houses, looking in the closets and looking up under the beds and inspecting our house for a presence of a man. So if my mother and father were going to patch things up, her being on welfare didn't allow for that. And, you know, my father wasn't working, so, you know, he had to get booted out of the house if we were going to have welfare. And it's just a cruel, insensitive way to give people support. And, you know, I had a flashback when I had this contract to provide housing for the women who were exiting prisons.
Mm-hmm. Which is your life today, which we'll get to just to give folks some context. But yeah, go ahead.
The lady came in who was doing a site visit for the contract and began looking in the refrigerator. And that was one of the things that the woman did from the county a long time ago. And I just had a flashback, and I said, don't just walk in our house and open the refrigerator. And, you know, it was connected to what happened, you know, as a child being on the county.
Of course.
Yeah.
The first, I guess it's 2/3 plus or minus of this book, is really hard to get through because we live along with you all the setbacks and all the falling off the wagon and all the going back to jail. And it takes us a while to get to the point where it turns around for you. What happened to turn it around?
So what happened that turned it around was first a conversation with a teacher in the Sergeant's Hall at California Rehabilitation Center. And I told this teacher that I was having problems at night going to sleep. Her classes had jarred all of the memories and all of the hardships of my life.
You had gotten into a drug treatment program, we should say, in prison, right?
Yeah, I had
gotten. And that's what this was.
Yeah, I had gotten into a sort of diversion-like program on my fourth prison term. I had pushed the courts to give me that alternative to having a criminal number to a narcotic number.
Literally the number on your file.
So, you know, when you get a number, you never forget the number. So my W number was W31416. My narcotic number was N0348. So the N0348 allowed me 6 weeks of what we call CCEP, and it was a civil addict education program, California civil addict mm-hmm, education mm-hmm, program. Mm-hmm. So in this class, it would talk about family dynamics and abuse and violence and the environment, and it woke up things that had happened in my lifetime. So I went to the teacher and I said, "Miss Tucker, you know, I can't sleep at night. I'm having thoughts and memories about some experiences." And I shared some of the experiences with her. And that was the early childhood molestation, the loss of my son. And she looked at me and said, "You're in my class, aren't you? What's your name?" And I said, "Yes, I'm in your class, and my name is Susan Burton." She said, "Don't worry about passing my class. You have too many other things to deal with." And that was the first indication that the first time someone had actually said, "Something's really went wrong with your life, and don't worry about it, we're going to help you." You know, and because Ms. Tucker was famous for flunking her whole class. And if she flunked the whole class, nobody could get out of prison. You know, nobody could get out of that civil addict education program. Nobody could leave California Rehabilitation Center. You'd have to wait 3 months to take the class over again. So when she did that, you know, her being the hard-handed teacher, it validated. It was the first time I had had validation.
It takes a while from that incident to the last time you were released from prison. It's a number of years. But when you got out of prison that last time, you literally, you say in the book, you had clothes on your back and that was it.
Yeah. People are released from prison literally so unprepared. They give you $200 and we call it gate money. And you pay for a bus ticket back to L.A. You get off the Greyhound bus, downtown Skid Row, and you're supposed to make a life from that. And you think, you know, many times I left the prison and I'm thinking, you know, I'm adult. You know, I'm smart. I can make it. I won't get caught up again. I won't return. But you get off downtown Skid Row, your target for all of the environmental harms that's held in that area, you know, the pain and trauma in that area is so thick you can almost reach your hand out and touch it. And you don't have an ID. You don't have clothing. You don't have a place to live. And, you know, how do you make a life out of that? So ultimately, each time, I failed.
Except for the last time.
The last time.
And you found this organization called A New Way of Life.
Yes. Well, I actually found a treatment facility in Santa Monica, California, upper scale neighborhood that had this, you know, buffet of services. It's like you could pick all the things that you need to repair your life.
And we should be clear here, Santa Monica and the place where you were could not be more different from Skid Row.
It could be. It's a rich, whole
it's
different
white,
world. It's rich. It's white. It's wealthy. It's polished. It's giving. It's resourced. It's a different. I used to walk to the beach from the place from the place I was at in Santa Monica. And I began to, you know, use those resources. And then it dawned on me, you know, why wasn't I offered this long, long time ago? You know, why wasn't it offered to people in South L.A. where the war on drugs had decimated that community? And women were coming back, you know, in groves trying to get their lives together, literally with nothing and failing. So we were like, I guess you would call job security for corrections.
Because you kept going back to jail.
Because we kept coming back.
Now you have this organization you run.
Yes.
A New Way of Life, in which you offer services, help, and protection.
Yes.
To women coming out of prison.
Yes.
Tell me about it.
So based on what I received in Santa Monica, I thought if we had this in South L.A., our community would be a lot better off. I worked a minimum wage job, lived in with a person, saved $13,000, and got a little house. And when I got the house, I would go down to Skid Row, where I used to get off the bus, and wait for my friends, the people I knew, and offer them.
From prison? You knew they would be coming through?
The people I knew from prison. I knew that bus would pull up at 1 o'clock and 5 o'clock every day with women walking off unprepared. And I'd be there to meet that bus. And I'd say, hey, girl, I have a house. It's drug and alcohol free. If you want to go there, if you want a bed there, you know, I have one for you. And some women came, some women didn't. But it wasn't long before the house was filled. There was 11 of us living in it. I slept in the dining room. That was my little office slash bedroom.
You bought bunk beds from IKEA, right?
I brought bunk beds from IKEA.
Yeah.
And there was a beautiful community of women struggling to enter, but supporting each other in so many ways. If someone found a resource, they'd share that resource. If someone lost their child, we'd cry together. You know, and someone have a victory of a job, we'd celebrate. But we were a community of women, formerly incarcerated women, supporting one another.
I'm sure you've thought of this over the years. You have broken the cycle. You broke the cycle of violence, of drugs, of abuse. I'm sure you look back and say, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I look back and I think of what a journey and what a celebration. I feel so fortunate to have made the journey from all the pain and trauma to healing and health and life. Not only for me, but for many, many women and their children. You know, one of the realities is that I can't bring my son back. But I can celebrate another woman getting her child back. And I can't take back the years that I spent traveling in and out of the prison system. But I can help another woman not suffer and be tortured traveling in and out of the prison system and support her to get her life back. So that's what I do. And I do it with real commitment and a joy. It makes my life full and happy to see how I've impacted someone to not go back into drug addiction and violence and trauma.
Susan Burton, the book is called Becoming Ms. Burton. Thank you so much for your time.
You are so welcome.
We'll be right back.
That's it for my interview with Susan Burton. A new episode for you next week. In the meantime, do let us know what you think about this episode, because it's a little different, or the podcast in general. Leave us a review or a rating at Apple Podcasts. We do check them out. I promise you we do. Bridget Bonder produced this episode. She's the one who checks out the responses in Apple Podcasts, by the way. Marketplace is produced by Nancy Fargali. Sitar Nieves is the executive director of On Demand. Deborah Clark is the senior vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you next time.